Accessing library computer data.
And to make sure history never forgets the name Enterprise.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Penske Podcast. If you haven't tuned in before, this is a podcast where we are running through all 178 episodes of Star Trek The Next Generation, giving our thoughts and feelings about each and every one. Right now we're up to episode 22 of season 3. This one is called The Most Toys. It was directed by Tim Bond, written by Sherry Goodhartz, and it aired back on May 5th, 1990. In this episode, Lieutenant Commander Data is kidnapped by an obsessive collector who leads the Enterprise crew to believe that Data was destroyed in a shuttlecraft accident. We're going to be joined by Sean and Clay to talk about this one. And right after this break, we are going to get deep into The Most Toys.
Kivas wishes you to wear this set of clothes and to sit in your chair.
I have no reason to accede to Mr. Fajo's wishes.
He will give you reasons if you force him to.
Mr. Fajo is deluding himself if he believes he can keep me here. The Enterprise is certain to find me.
They're not even looking for you. They think you're destroyed. Your shuttle blew up. A high tritium explosion.
They will scan the debris and discover I was not aboard.
They'll find exactly what they thought they'd find. Traces of your component elements. We put them aboard the shuttle in just the right proportions.
Clearly, Mr. Fajo has no moral difficulty with my imprisonment here.
Mr. Fajo has no moral difficulties at all.
Do you?
Clever, android. Is it part of your program to seek out vulnerabilities in your enemies?
Yes. Are you my enemy?
I obey Fajo, and so does everyone on this ship.
Why?
You are a curious thing, aren't you?
Do you object to the question?
Kivas finds ways to get what he wants from his people. His rewards for loyalty are lavish. His punishments for disloyalty are equally lavish. You won't find anyone here on this ship to help you escape. Face it, android. He has you.
It appears he has us both.
So do you guys have any unique collections that you'd like to share with the world?
Clay does.
Do I?
What's
my unique collection?
He's got a good eclectic mix of different Kurt Russell paraphernalia.
Well, it's actually Kurt Russell hairphenalia. It's just strands of what people tell me when I pay for it is strands of his hair. And I hope to one day make an entire wig out of it because it is the most perfect of all hair.
Become a Kurt Russell suit, like Buffalo Bill or something. Just slowly making a different version of it.
Do you have any collections?
I don't have anything super interesting. Just growing up is the typical stuff of comic books, baseball cards for a little bit. Little stupid figurines that really didn't add up to anything. And then my sister had a huge Beanie Baby collection.
Oh, wow.
That was huge for a little while. She had the fox with the brown belly, which was worth $100 at peak Beanie Baby mania.
I can't even say that.
So that was...
Well, now
so
it's
that
over.
Was for like
so it's
a
not
solid
anything.
Week and a half it was worth that much, right?
Yeah, but what a week and a half, I'll tell you. It was just Mai Tais on the beach that entire
No, various different art and comics-related things strewn about my house, as does Sean.
Yeah, well, I feel the difference, like, I guess my other question would be board games, but I feel like there's a difference between a collection and just getting a bunch of shit. Like, a collection implies that you're sort of displaying the collection.
Right, you know right.
Yeah,
you're sort of making it art.
We do that too. Yeah,
you do. We do.
Well, I have a collection of old cameras that I have on display in my place in Brooklyn, and then I have a collection of Hot Wheels.
Oh, nice!
In a glass case here in Maine, just cheapo Hot Wheels, just ones I like.
They're not worth $100. They don't have a goddamn brand.
No. I get drunk and I'll go to Toys R Us and I'll look for like the new Hot Wheels and I'll buy like the cars I like and For a dollar and a half, you get a lot of enjoyment out of that moment.
Wait, hold on. You get drunk and then you drive to Toys R Us?
No, usually.
Or do you get drunk? Do you get drunk at Toys R Us?
No, well, yeah.
In the parking
lot.
Yeah,
usually I'm at a bar.
What Toys R Us is this?
And also all of them. Anyway, no, any kind of, like, I'm drunk and my friends and I will, Clay, you and I must have done this. We'll walk by a store that looks like.
I was not in the car at any time.
It's on foot. No, man. In Portland or in Brooklyn, wherever I'm at, usually I'm on foot. So I'll pop in and be like, oh, I wonder if they have matchboxes in there. I'll be right,
sir.
And then one restraining order later, he has to go to a different Toys R Us.
Not allowed 500 feet within a school at any point.
I bought a
trading these Hot Wheels.
I bought a Back to the Future DeLorean, and I had the sense to buy three of them because I had a feeling like, oh, these are going to go up in value, and I was right.
Of course, yeah.
That's nice. The thing. That's the thing I've always been bad at. I've never collected things for future monetary value. Even comics. I was always bad at that.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, do you think the villain in this episode would ever resell Data?
Well, let's get into that. So I guess I'll do the we'll bring it around. If you guys haven't figured it out, we're talking about The Most Toys, which is the episode where Data is collected by a obsessive collector and put onto a display of being one of the few unique things in the universe. And he's going to be one of these bits and gizmos or whatever in this guy's collection. It's called The Most Toys. It is the 22nd episode of season 3. So I don't think, Sean, to answer your question, that this guy would ever resell anything.
Yeah.
That he has. I don't think that's in his interest.
I agree. What do you think, Clay?
This is a...
Yeah, no, I mean, he doesn't seem like... Yeah, he doesn't really... He doesn't seem like a... what are they called? Speculators?
Yeah.
He seems like, you know, as he is in the episode, the kind of guy that has the cool thing and then he shows it to you and says, but don't touch it.
he's basically the Spinal
I would
Tap
like to get this
is, don't even
exactly.
Think about
it. I would like to get this out of the way at the front. That guy with the weird gold thing in his face was like the most disturbing makeup job I've ever seen.
Someone was, on one of the other reviews I saw said it looked like he got into attack a slinky, and it wasn't clear who won.
Yeah, just fits around. He was also picking his middle
that
nostril.
That was a great touch.
That
was a great touch.
I bet that was improv. I bet he was like, this is terrible. I'm going to make it work.
They did a lot of the makeup on this one. I felt I was watching it. They went almost overboard with how alien the guys looked.
Well,
and I wasn't really sure why.
I thought
she was
kind of
terrible.
Yeah, the girl looked like she just had like a facelift, like a bad facelift. Like, she looks like Bruce Campbell in Escape from LA, where he's got that really awful facelift job.
If you grabbed a Gem the Holograms cosplayer and shoved an apple pie in her face and just let it dry, that's what this girl looked like.
Well, here's my thing. I was thinking she was terrible too. I was like, why is she so bad? But I think the episode's implying that he disfigured her.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh.
So I guess it's
you're right. There was that.
It's sort of a runner of the episode. I think this is going to be my criticism of the episode. The episode is hinting at really dark stuff that it doesn't really have the balls to pull off. But anyway, let's get into a general thoughts about what are people's first overall impressions of this episode, The Most Toys. You want to start, Clay?
So this episode I wanted to love. But the thing that was dragging me down was this dependence on their story structure, where they feel like they have to have an A story and they have to have a B story, even though in this episode their B story is tangentially related to the A story. It still seems like a bunch of time wasting, and I just wish they had spent more time exploring the ideas of the collector and all that stuff, because like the last 5 minutes of this episode is awesome.
Yes.
And
so I'm just going to clarify that you
that,
think
because the rest of this episode
you think that the you think that the weak part is basically the ship, what's going on in the Enterprise.
Yeah, the fact, because I mean, if you break down what they do, they basically go to this other planet and go, hey, this is kind of weird, this looks strange, and then they go back and they find Data. There's really like the stuff. I actually like Geordi. I thought Geordi was pretty good in this episode.
no, you know, they,
well, at least he had something to do. You know, I mean, even though he, even though what he quote unquote did, you know, he didn't really actively do a lot. He kind of came to the conclusion a little. You know, it,
he didn't. What's interesting is that he didn't even figure it out. So his scenes where he's trying to figure out what went wrong are completely irrelevant by the end of it, because they figure it out by Crusher, Worf, and Riker going down to that water supply.
Right, and the whole, I thought the whole water supply thing was like a really convoluted way to get their plot.
I had no idea what was going on. I had to rewatch it to figure out why this was suspicious. Yeah. I didn't understand anything that was going on.
Yeah, I rewound it too. I couldn't figure out, like, there's too many names of chemicals and it's unclear, like, the motivation.
Right.
It didn't seem to matter.
Yeah, and it's all I mean, if they had just focused, if they just focused on the Data stuff and the Geordi stuff and had Geordi put it together, I think it would have been a lot stronger. But in the end, it's just like, you know when you come up with a really good idea, but then you find out somebody beat you to it by like a day or so, which has been happening to me a lot lately. It was kind of like that. So I identify with Geordi in this episode.
Is this because someone took your Highlander podcast idea?
It's not because someone took my Highlander podcast idea.
We should just call it the Geordi LaForge podcast, and it's just coming up with ideas that have already been done the day
It'll
before.
Be all episodes of TV shows that would be better if Geordi LaForge were in them.
Oh, my God.
Sean, what'd you think? What'd you think of this episode?
I really do agree with Clay. I thought that the stuff with Data and the Collector was spot on. They could have dug in a lot more. And the last 5 minutes of this episode were amazing.
Yeah.
But I felt like the beginning when Data explodes, the crew seems to move on pretty fast.
Yeah.
And a lot of time goes by before they really open up a serious investigation. And then when Geordi starts having all these concerns, Picard's like, you need a nap. Like, go to sleep. Basically says, you need to be more well rested. And I'm like, really? Like, they wouldn't have, like, held the ship in place, because it's pretty unusual that that would happen. You think
they
want to.
I guess. I thought they did it effectively because they have to go fix this plague or whatever is happening.
Yeah.
So they do have this. They do have this impetus to like get.
Yeah,
the fuck
that's
out
the
of
only there. Reason that that stuff on the planet, I think, makes sense that it's in there at all, is because they have to leave.
Right?
Can't they tractor beam that asshole and just we'll deal with you later?
You'd at least think that they'd ask him to like tell him where he's going to go so they can meet up later and maybe talk about
and
it.
And also,
you know,
what
like,
kind of reputation does this guy have? Like, he can't have a good reputation.
Well, they don't even look it up. So after they get suspicious, Picard's in his meeting room and he's like, computer, tell me all about whatever the guy's name is. And the computer starts.
His name is Kivas Vaho.
Tell me all about him. And the computer starts saying like, oh yeah, he has this art and that art, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, you probably should have done that research before you agreed to meet this guy in the middle of nowhere.
Seems pretty slimy in the first place. Yeah. Real,
hey man,
slimy guy.
When you
He's
have when you have
stuff.
A vitrium shortage or whatever the hell they had, you have to act fast.
Yeah,
there's a lot of names in this. His name is Kivas Fajo,
which is my favorite kind of Greek yogurt.
There's tricyanates, which is, I think, what they're selling. Hitridium, which is another thing that they're either, I don't know, trying to find. There's a lot of just goofy names going on in this one.
Yeah.
But yeah, Data is pretended to be blown up, captured by this guy who is a collector of fine novelty items across the galaxy, including baseball cards. And he sort of imprisons Data in this little cell, and Data has to try to figure out his way out, and the Enterprise is going about its business trying to move on with life after Data.
Yep.
Highlighted, in my opinion, by a scene that I actually laughed at, so I don't think they did it effectively, where Picard says, Mr. Data scanned the planet and realizes that Worf is sitting in office.
Yeah, they lean on that a little too heavily for it to really be dramatic. It is kind of like a weird like joke pause.
And the other horrible moment where they continue this thing of just Troy getting in people's business who aren't looking for therapy. Where she accosts Worf in the hallway and is just like, remember when you replaced that other person that died? That didn't make you happy. That didn't make you happy at all. And Worf is real. I mean, he seemed to be handling it okay. What does she expect to happen?
Well, they finally found something for her to do, and it's to explain the unsaid feelings of other characters.
Right.
Yes.
Well, she has the emotional pain stick for Worf.
Mm-hmm. Jabbing it right between the shoulder blades.
I do have to say, and this isn't just because of my own personal bias, I thought the references to Tasha were good. I liked them.
Yeah, no, I thought it makes sense.
I thought
here's my question for you real quick. Yep. Sorry. Is Worf the best person for ops?
So, this is something that I have a problem with in general, which is so why do they always have I know it's a TV thing and I know that the guys in the credits have to be the guys who are on screen at all times. But why would you put your security officer on the ops panel and then be like, oh, hey, we got to go down to the planet. Like, why wouldn't you put like literally anybody else on the ops panel? Somebody who doesn't have to get up and leave every time you do something.
Worf is still obligated to go down.
It felt weird to see him sitting down because usually he's standing up, like white knuckling that wooden piece of furniture up at the top of the brain.
Yeah, it's very infantilizing to put him in that chair and have like Riker swing his leg up over his head and be like, tell us where the hit Ridium is, Commander Worf.
Tell us where the ball Ridium is, Worf.
I just don't think that operations is really suited for Worf's skill set. You know, like it's like managing all the like day-to-day like bullshit, and that's not really, I don't get the impression that that's Worf's like forte.
One thing that I thought was hysterical is when they went through Data's quarters and they like were looking at his personal stuff, and the first thing they do is uncover a painting and go, man, Data's been painting this for months. It's a picture of an ice cave. It's missing Luke Skywalker hanging from the top.
I'm actually gonna have to go nerdy here. That is actually the time portal that they fell into in Times Squared in season 2. He's been painting it for like 17 episodes.
Wait, so it's not just a circular swirl, which is something that I could see a robot painting if it were to try to paint?
Well, it sort of is, but he's actually painting something he's seen, and it was in Tin Man. Sam Elbrum looks at it. So he's been painting it for many, many episodes. He started it after the Times Squared.
It's part of his series on uterine canals.
All right, that's defended. But then they go on to his desk and they pull out his only four personal items. One is a book from the captain. That's fine.
Yep.
Another is a deck of cards with chips like glued to it for some reason. What's the third one?
Riker's
hologram of Tasha.
Yeah, the hologram of Tasha standing around awkwardly.
Mm-hmm. Well, here's my question about those things. Why are they in his desk?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, Data's trying to be human. There's so many ways you can thematically tie that into the collection aspect. Yeah. You know, to like go into Data's room and be like, these are all the things that Data has collected.
That's a good point. That's really interesting. I wish they had done that.
Yeah.
And Geordi's just like, Data is, on one hand, it makes sense that Data would be unemotionally attached and would just throw all this shit into like his drawer. But on the other hand, it makes me like Data's trying to be human. I thought he would take these out and like display them around.
Part of me did kind of wish that it would be a lot more stuff that you'd never seen before. Like that he'd go, oh, his favorite hat. And you're like, what?
That dildo he brought back from Ryza.
Gross. I did also ask, is Data the only person who has like a computer panel in his quarters?
He doesn't need. I think so.
I like it.
Yeah,
I like that.
Yeah,
touch.
I like that. Yeah. That makes sense. That was a good touch. I liked it.
What's crazy is what could you do with that you can't already do by speaking to the goddamn computer anyway?
Yes. Well, there was another. I'm just going so deep here. Another previous episode, Data said he had souped up that computer to actually operate at a speed faster than the normal Enterprise computer.
Damn it, Wes, you win again.
Yeah.
So.
This is what happens when you watch 78 episodes of Star Trek.
Are you proud that you're correcting us and killing the humor?
This is actually the deepest goddamn sci-fi show ever written. Everything just comes together. But I just thought that scene was really lame. Geordi and Wesley just like walking around sort of... It almost feels like an invasion of privacy to go through. I know he's dead at this point, technically, like in terms of the show.
Who do you think is Data's delete buddy who is in charge of deleting all his porn when he dies?
I think it's Jordy, and Wesley was tailing him too hot to,
I'm sorry,
be able
not,
to get it done.
I don't mean not porn. I mean holographic images of Tasha.
Well, that, all right. So that thing, what do you do with that thing? It just shows her standing around holding her hand, holding her hands. I mean, does it talk? Does it do dances? Does it twirl? I mean,
what? It was her eulogy thing when she died.
But like, she posed like, all right, now just stand there, Tasha, for like 10 seconds. I'm going to run this on a loop, and then this will be a trophy for somebody.
Well, I mean, me and Clay covered just the sheer darkness of, do all these people have the recordings in case they could die at any minute?
Yeah.
And they just like pass them off to the next person and be like, oh, Clay, you know, thank you for doing so many Star Trek podcasts. And it's just me standing there and you hold on to it for
I've
a long time.
Wasted my life. It's
it did, and in the hologram, the fire in my neighborhood actually starts going off, and then I just have to say goodbye. But I mean, let's get into, I suppose, the collection aspect, which we thought was the much better aspect of this one. Thoughts on Saul Rubinek as Fajo, or I think that's how you pronounce his name.
I think he was weird but good. That actor, he's been in like True Romance and Frasier, and I think he managed to take his lines and make it a bit quirky and play with sort of the body language and the facial expressions. Like, not something you'd want to hang out with, but I've never seen a character like that on Star Trek before, so I guess I overall liked him.
Yeah,
I like him. The stuff I've seen him in before, he plays kind of similar characters, but it works for this. Yeah, like you said, True Romance, and he's in Unforgiven, and he plays very the same kind of like quirky, I don't want to say slightly effeminate, but he's got kind of a weird edge to him that's interesting.
I always picture him as sort of the shady Jewish.
Yeah,
lawyer.
he's
like that would be that's
he
his
very
kind of
much
role.
Has that vibe.
I think he is Jewish,
and he's
I think his name is Saul.
He is of Rubinek. Yeah, he's also one of the leads in that Warehouse 13. I think it's called on Sci-Fi.
Oh, really?
Channel, which I think is somewhat popular. Yeah. Huh. I thought he danced a dangerous line, becoming slightly close to being annoying. I think he stayed for the most part on the right path.
Yeah.
And that's really only, I think it's interesting that we had the Barkley episode last time, which I mentioned that I thought Dwight Schultz did a really good job of not making Barkley great.
Right.
I think Rubinek did a slightly worse job, but he also made this villain, as you were saying, Sean, pretty unique in that it's probably the nastiest Star Trek TNG villain we've seen so far.
Yeah. Like you said, the implications of this villain is tremendous. The episode stayed pretty PG-13, but if you really wanted to go to town, this could get really dark with this character.
So you both agree that he did disfigure his female assistant?
We're
going to take that as...
I think so.
Okay. All right. Yeah, that alone is kind of weird, very dark.
Yeah.
What'd you think of his collection, I guess, for a lack of a better word?
It was fine. I mean, it's tough because it's a bunch of shit that doesn't exist. So,
well, it's a weird hodgepodge of shit you just make up and a baseball card. You know,
so
it's like
I was thinking about that as you were mentioning it earlier. I
kind
of wish he had something from Earth that was more silly. Like the baseball card is something you can identify with, but it would be interesting if like he had something where clearly his understanding of Earth culture didn't click exactly correctly. So he
like the brown belly fox.
Yeah,
like,
if he had the last remaining VHS copy of The Mask or something.
Or if you had a super rare Beanie Baby. Is that what Wes just said?
Right. Yes, it is.
Yeah, that is.
Wes?
Sean, we're losing you, Sean. We're losing you. No, it's the... I think there's a sketch in there almost. Like, he gets more and more ridiculous about the things that he's collected. Because he did have quite a bit of Earth stuff. Sorry, weird edit there. There'll be a little bit of an audio clip. We're back. We dropped a call, but now we're here and we're back.
I'm not going to say from the.
It got a little like, who are these people collecting things? But anyway, it's we were just talking about how weird his collection is and sort of going down the lines of, you know, having a sort of novelty item mixed in with everything. Because he does have two Earth paintings
and a
baseball
and
card.
An Egyptian statue, I think, is. based in, I think it's Egyptian.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it looked like it was something like that, yeah.
Yeah, but then he had weird, like, Native American blanket beads and stuff that was just a hodgepodge.
Yeah.
Yep, and some animal.
It's tough because, so as soon as he came on, the first thing I was thinking of was Benicio del Toro's character in Guardians of the Galaxy. Because it's the exact same character. But the difference there is they had $100 million behind them to make a collection of things that are, you know, even if you don't know what they are, they're interesting to look at.
Right. Yeah.
This one is obviously, you can imagine. This one is obviously, you know, they worked with what they had.
Yeah. It was a, modern art gallery with a little swirly chair in the middle.
and a weird puppet monster.
Yeah. Hey, I feel like they could have piled on some shit to make it more interesting. Sorry, Wes.
Yeah, it racks up the budget. It's funny, when they were going around, they got to the chair that Data was supposed to sit in, and I thought the chair was part of his collection. I was like, oh, the rare metal chair that is only found on one
I gotta
planet.
Say, when Data or Brent Spiner is turned off and he gets pushed and he bounces off the chair and hits the floor, he's pretty good job at staying very straight and hurt. I mean, that must have hurt.
It's good physicality.
I was trying to decide whether or not that was a mannequin. I think it might have been a mannequin.
Really?
I don't know. He falls way too straight for that to be just a person. It's a tough call. It's a tough call.
He's a robot, Clay.
Either way, it looks good.
What about,
I thought
when he dives onto the collector and he gets shoved back like 50 feet?
Is that like a puppet?
It was real. I couldn't tell if they had a cord and they yanked him, but then how would they get rid of that in green screen? You know, I don't know. Like, there was a stunt they did that I thought I couldn't figure out how they had done it.
Well,
yeah, that's interesting. I didn't remember that scene happening. And it is kind of like you've never seen anything like that on TNG before.
No. Either way, I thought, you know, these Data episodes are forcing me to pay attention to what Brent Spiner's doing, and he's very good.
He's outstanding.
I thought his not blinking thing was just something he was specifically doing for the Tin Man, the one where he has the kid.
Offspring.
But I think that's just something he does in close up, because in all the close ups in this episode, he never blinks. And after he falls on his face, when he's on his back, they do a shot of him and he's not breathing, which I thought was a nice touch.
Right.
Yeah.
One thing that I didn't understand was when the collector made a jar of acid and threw it at his clothes. I felt like, all right, so if you're a collector, you want to keep stuff in its original packaging. And
that's a good point. That's a very good point.
You would never, if you were a real collector, you would never hurt his clothes. You would
Although technically, he did say that he wouldn't mind if he was walking around without clothes.
Yeah, but you'd want to keep the clothing then in a special box then.
True. No, I agree.
Right. You see, you could take it out and, you know, to have certain different versions of each thing. But I thought that was a weakness in the script where Data would care that he had clothing.
I actually liked that part because that whole sequence of events is sort of like a step into Data's reasoning systems. Where, like, that whole action of burning the clothes is like, well, I can't get him to do it by asking him or telling him, so I have to create a situation where it's the more logical or the more correct decision for him to make is to put on other clothes. And I like that whole back and forth, even though it's a little blunt where it's, you know, be like, well, you could be naked. You even have – like, you know, that stuff is a little bit on the nose. But I thought it was an interesting – it's almost a foreshadowing of the end a little bit.
Yeah. It's I totally agree. I think it's just what you were saying about this episode. This episode really sort of points out a lot about Data's programming that becomes sort of canonized by this episode. I don't think I remember them ever mentioning that he wouldn't kill somebody before. I think that's new.
Well, I can only assume he has the same protocols programmed into him that RoboCop has. So.
I would imagine that like AI programmers like 200 years from now are just watching the RoboCop and
that's
being like,
why,
this is exactly
as Data was getting beamed off the ship, he was about to blast the guy in the balls just like RoboCop would.
Yeah.
Like Riker stopped him.
This is true. I mean, I think this episode adds a lot for Data in and of it. Like, I think this episode so far is my favorite of the Data focused episodes.
Yeah.
I think it's the best, even though I think it has some really, really big weaknesses. And I wish they'd spent just more time with Data and Kivas, mm-hmm. you know, having a sort of back and forth. What I did appreciate was that I think they went dark enough with Kivas to make it feel something, like you, to make you... I guess my point is that Data is interesting because... It's such a weird thing watching Data in scenes where he should have emotion, but he clearly doesn't. Because you feeling as a viewer empathetic for him, I always have this thing where I'm like, oh, that bastard, like, get him, Data. But then I'm like, oh, Data doesn't even really care. You know, Data's just sitting there sort of like trying to think of his way to get out of there, but he's not particularly insulted or anything like that.
Yeah.
You know, it's weird to have... It's weird to sort of like, you notice that you're just putting your emotions into a character, which you're doing in all television, but it's like, it's plain as day to do it with this android who doesn't actually feel anything that you think he's feeling.
Yeah, it kind of, I mean, it kind of goes, adds to what you were saying, in the Offspring episode where the camera treats him like much more of a human than he is. You know, yep. Which is fairly interesting.
For my next collection, I'm going to get a stable internet connection, and we'll proceed from there. Anyway, we're back. So, Sean, did you have anything that you wanted to add about just thinking about how I was mentioning that Data sort of interacts with things oddly, and as a viewer, you sort of feel detached from him in a weird way.
That's why I like Data, is because he's so strong and so smart and so capable. You're always waiting for him to be a superhero, but he never does. And in a way, I like that because you're leaving people wanting more. And when he does snap an action, like in the end, when he's throwing guys around or, you know, being really super smart, it's like you get that release like, oh, that's right. Thank you, Data, for being a badass for a minute.
Right.
So I like that they tease it a lot, and they very rarely give in, but I like when they do give in.
Yeah. Because I was thinking as I was watching this, like if this guy has a problem, he can't really hurt Data because he wants to add him to his collection. Right. But if you like tried to torture Data, it doesn't mean anything.
No.
But, you know what I mean? You're not causing any pain.
But it would have been interesting. There's like no if they upside. Had a scene where he was trying to get Data mad or trying to test him or slapping him, you know, it wouldn't harm Data, but there's a lot of stuff they could have done and gone really dark. It was totally implied, which was great, but
they played it too safe. That's kind of what they end up doing in First Contact a little bit, where the Borg Queen is you know,
giving her skin.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. That would, if she wasn't such a horrible character, it would have meant more.
They should have just brought back Saul Rubinek to be the boss of the Borg.
Or just a Jewish lawyer in space.
I mean, it all makes sense. I think that's some kind of conspiracy theory. Anyway, let's get into the last 5 minutes of this episode, which we all think that we thought was good. Clay, do you want to lead off your thoughts about what you think works? And let's take it from the escape. We'll consider that the last 5 minutes. So where the Varya comes in and helps Data escape, what you liked and what you didn't like.
I didn't like the... So I feel like this episode was written from the end and then reverse engineered. And one of the things that they didn't spend a lot of time with, I feel like, is the escape portion. Like why does she know the code for that thing, and why is that thing even out if you need your handprint to do it? And
I was thinking, why couldn't Data just bash it open?
So you know, kind of jumping off on what Sean was saying about Data is, as I was thinking about it, as I was watching this, I was like, why doesn't he just punch his way out of this place? Like, what's
right.
What's stopping him from punching the Saul Rubinek in the face?
Right. The force field.
Oh, that's right. Oh, I forgot about that.
And he tries to buzz the door, but because the door is so strong, I think it. I thought that everything was pretty unbreakable, except
okay. All right.
He could have smashed the paintings and that puppet monster.
I was waiting for that to happen. I was waiting for Data to start destroying the collection of stuff.
Yeah.
Which would have been a weird sort of ethical dilemma for Data, whether or not he
right.
would do that.
See, I would right. have found that really interesting, actually. That would have been interesting. But, I just, the so when they get to the shuttle bay, the Data casually sitting at the thing while a lot of shit's going on outside the ship kind of was weird. And then, like, he doesn't even know what's going on until after he, you know, disintegrates that girl. It's a little clunky.
There was a lot of staging that needed to happen
right.
for all that to
right.
come together in the end. And it makes no sense why Data, like, what's Data doing while all this stuff
right.
is going on? He seems to be just be sitting in the ship.
And the guy who shoots her, he throws his own gun away like, oh, I can't believe how horrible this gun is, which makes it, okay, yes. so Data can grab the other one.
Right.
But yeah, it's pretty right. implausible.
But yeah, well, and also like after, you know, when he stops short of shooting her the first time, why doesn't she like dive out of the way or something?
her dive for the gun
the
on the floor
gun
is
I've
the worst
I've ever seen in my life. It's like she just falls like face plants in front of the gun.
But she's like 5 feet away from it. It's not even she would have to like get up and sort of walk over and dive again to get anywhere near
like
where the gun is.
It's like if you dove onto a slip and slide, but there's no water on it. burns you with yellow rubber.
Yeah. But
so at that point, what do you think of? Let's get it. I guess the break here would be, what do you think of Data shooting?
Well,
the gun?
Go ahead, John. Well, I was just going to say once he picks up the gun, once Data picks up the gun, it gets really good and really interesting because, you know, I don't even entirely know what sort of mechanical process he went through to determine that the answer was to shoot this guy. Because
right.
I feel like there's a lot of other answers. There's a lot of other avenues he could have gone down. Because, I mean, I assumed the way it was going to end was something similar was going to happen. I guess I didn't foresee them teleporting him out of there before he shoots, which I would also like to talk about because it's even darker than if he actually just shot the guy. But I figured he was probably going to shoot the guy or possibly kill the guy and use some sort of mechanical reasoning to say that his life was in danger because he did say that he's programmed to use deadly force as in order to defend himself.
Yeah.
Right. Again, it would be kind of the RoboCop thing. Like Data's given an out where he's allowed to take this
right,
guy
exactly.
out.
Right, yeah.
Exactly. You know, like when you fire the CEO or whatever, RoboCop
right.
can kill him. Data's
exactly.
in the same position.
And so
but he could
I thought,
have grabbed the guy. Sorry, Clay. Go ahead.
Oh, no. I was just going to say I thought it was going to be more like that. So having him stand there and kind of – and having Saul Rubinek try to mess with him a little bit – and then have his response be, I can't let this go on anymore, is yep. really fascinating.
Yeah.
And I love the, to continue the Spiner doing great stuff, the Spiner, like data processing what his options
yes,
are,
yeah.
is done very facially. It's sort of
very subtle.
One reviewer called it, he looks like a hard drive light blinking,
yes,
basically,
yeah.
just sort of like contemplating what he can
script.
Do.
Yeah.
And then so Sean, what are your thoughts up to this point? Up to the point where Data
shoots?
I
love how they leave it very, very undefined because Data can't, as far as I know, Data can't lie. So when he does this and Riker asks what happened,
yeah,
he goes, "Oh,
later.
must have been a malfunction." I mean, he can lie if it's like he's ordered to lie by the captain in a later season. But can he shoot someone because this guy is just going to keep doing this? I have to just kill him because I'll be saving a lot of suffering. But then why wouldn't you just run up to him and grab him and arrest him, basically, and deal with him that way? So maybe there is a darker side to Data, and that's what I love about this moment is you don't know. And even Riker and Cole Meany kind of give him a look like, huh, something's going on here.
Well, I mean, at the point where Data shoots, he doesn't know that he's about to
right.
be rescued.
Right.
So he thinks that killing this guy at this point is the only way. Like, he can't arrest him at that point. He just has to kill
right.
him.
And I'm really glad they didn't go the cheap way out and have him actually shoot, but all he was doing was, you know, No, if he
shooting into the pillow or something,
if he would shoot at him and then be like, "Well, why did you shoot me?" And he says, "Well, I knew that the power from this gun was going to overheat your protective force field and destroy your machine, so then I could grab it with my fist." Like,
would be funny if he did that and then he punched him in the face. That would be pretty good.
like punched him through the head.
he does. It just goes super dark. It's like the Game of Thrones with the Mountain Kills. Yeah. Spoiler alert. He just grabs him and crushes
but
his
yeah,
head.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like that would have been an easy out. And I'm so getting into what happens when he gets beamed back to the ship when he says, "Oh, there must have been a malfunction." Here's a question for you guys. Is this a new level of complexity added to Data, or is it actually bad writing?
Ooh, I think it's two. I think it's both, unfortunately. So,
yeah.
I think the complexity it adds to Data is fantastic. It makes it really good. The origin of it is from a behind the scenes production disagreement about how.
Really?
To proceed.
Oh, okay. That's interesting.
Oh, tell us about that before I answer then.
Sure. So originally, the script and scriptwriter, whose name is Sherry Goodhart, and Brent Spiner were very vehement that they wanted Data to shoot this guy. The other executive producers didn't think it was in keeping with the character, and they didn't want that to happen. So they had the end result be the beam out, which sort of negates the shooting.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But
and that was sort of their happy compromise about what they wanted
to
do.
So I'd say it's a happy accident. I think it was incredibly effective. I think that solution is more interesting than either of those two separate solutions.
Yeah, I agree.
But I know that decisions with production don't often give you that. Usually it's a disappointing decision when they rule by committee. But this is an instance where I feel like that's awesome. I totally accept it as being canon, and I think it adds to what Data is going to become.
Yeah,
but bad writing. There might be an argument there too.
I'm sorry. You just reminded me. The other thing, the Data doesn't lie line, which is in this one, was thrown in by the other producers to make that. That was not in there until they had this sort of disagreement about Data lying.
What is his line exactly?
I forget what his exactly line about lying is.
I listened closely. I'm sorry, I can't remember it. But I think he said.
Do you mean the very end line when he's talking to Riker?
It must have been a malfunction. Like, he doesn't actually lie, but he misleads with intent.
Yes. So I think you could be happy with. I think they could have actually been slightly more vague in it to make Data's lie seem a little bit more like he's not potentially lying. He's just kind of skirting the truth.
He could have been like, "What? I don't know what you're talking about. Whatever, dude."
Well, as soon as they started to teleport him away and they cut to Riker and O'Brien, I was like, you guys better move the hell out of the way.
It just cleanly shaves Riker. Doesn't kill him, just takes him out. But
they should have had Data kill the guy, and then when Riker asked him why he did it, he should have said, "Oh, well, I watched you do it to a defenseless girl, so I thought it was okay."
I was just picturing, you know, we cut to the thing of Data about to pull the trigger. It cuts back to the Enterprise beaming him up, and when Data appears, he's just covered in blood. Like, it's just like, "Data, did you kill that guy?" He's like, no, Commander, I did not kill him.
Would you believe spontaneous combustion?
Well, here's my problem with the ending. And I don't even know if it's a problem as much as I feel like I have three pieces that only two of them fit together no matter how I put them. The thing is, I don't know if I would have liked Data to kill the guy and actually see that happen. The problem with that is if they do that, it ruins the very final scene, which I think is really fantastic, where he's talking to him in the prison cell.
Right.
Because you lose the "I am only an android" line, which is like probably the greatest final line that Star Trek episode has done yet so far. So the problem there is I don't mind the beam out. It feels a little bit of a cop out to me, just because maybe it's just because I know this whole production thing that they weren't sure what they wanted to do. I sort of agree with you guys, though, at the same time that it works in a lot of different
ways. Yeah, because I mean, if he shoots them. I feel like they picked the perfect balance because I think either option where either he doesn't shoot him or he shoots him, or like I was saying, he shoots him, but there's some sort of like trickier outcome to it, is just not as satisfying. Like I if he shot him and killed him, I think I would be more surprised than anything else, because I don't think that would is something that he would do. Right, so the fact that he does it but is not successful and then lies about it or whatever is infinitely more interesting.
Yes. Yeah. I'm always – Sean, are you still there?
Still here.
Okay. Just got to keep checking.
Fair question.
Your little win-
All right.
Your little window moved to a smaller thing. But I think the – what I love about this one, it ties into the episode, Sean, you were talking about earlier where Data has to lie. Yep. I love creepy Data. Like if Data had just murdered a guy and he's standing there in front of you sort of just stone-faced, it really changes how you perceive the character.
Yeah.
It's the same as when he's lying. When Data is lying to you, it's the creepiest fucking thing in the world.
Yeah. He's so straight-faced.
Right. And it's when he's lying that you see him for the robot that he is, kind of. Like you realize his computer is thinking something.
Right. Well, you're right. Like the hard drive light kind of in a way.
Right.
Blinking.
It's funny because between this and I want to say some of the actions in Offspring and you know some of the other episodes that I've seen, if I had been watching this as it was airing, I mean, I don't know that they don't do this, but with all of this focus on him and this kind of like weird focus on him, my first thought would be, oh, he's going to go crazy at some point. Like at the end of this episode, if I was Riker and O'Brien, as soon as Data left, I would turn to one of them and go, maybe we should check his circuits or something, just to be sure. Right, see, this plays back into the thing that I've said like way in the past, where I wish there was one character who was just unsure of him on some level. Everybody's so okay with him.
Right.
Right, I think that ties into what I was saying.
Well, Worf was designed, I think, in the originally to be a skeptic of Data or resent him because Data's number three, basically, and Worf has to answer to this stupid robot. And I think that Roddenberry, some of the writers, thought that Worf would be kind of upset about that. But it really doesn't come across that way. In fact, when Data blows up, they zoom in on Worf, and he's the one that has the emotional reaction. So,
he's the one that says Data.
Yeah,
I was like, what a wrong character to say.
Well,
that.
I agree, but I was glad they picked him because I like him, and it's good to see the hardest guy react in the softest way.
It's funny you mention that because I think that they don't do nearly enough of Worf and Data scenes, and I think they're always one of the strongest ones because the characters are so diametrically opposed to each
other. But they have so much respect for each other that it's understood. Like a lot goes on without them saying anything. I feel like when you get a Worf and Data scene,
and they weirdly relate because Data's strong and Worf likes like
that's it.
He sort of respects his strength, sort of.
He's an ass kicker.
He does. There's that one episode where the Klingon comes on and he like challenges Data to like an arm wrestling contest, and Data just crushes him over and over again. Things like that. But so I guess let's talk about the very final scene, which I think is fantastic. I cannot feel passion or whatever he says. I am only an android, and then walks off, and that's the end of it. You guys have any thoughts about the final?
I feel like I would have ended it after the previous scene where Data walks away and Riker's skeptical. I didn't get a whole lot out of that final scene. I feel like when he goes, oh, Data, the tables are turned. Now I'm behind your, you know, whatever. Like, and I thought, yeah, I get it. That's very obvious. The connotation of what's happening here.
Oh, that's funny, because I would have not needed this final scene if Data had killed him and actually shot him. You know what I mean? But because it wouldn't have made any sense to have his resurrected corpse brought back. But.
Well, what I actually liked about that scene is I actually think it adds to the creepiness factor of the transportation scene. Because in the transportation scene, you get him sort of lying about it. But in that scene, you have him sort of lying about it again. Or at least it raises more questions because it's like, all right, well, if he's not lying about it and he is just an android and he can't act out of passion or anything like that, then why did he decide to shoot him?
That's
right. It makes it that much more cold-blooded when you realize that he didn't have anything else
for
going.
For me, okay, I agree with what you guys are saying. For it to work for me, if Data had said, I can't react that way because I'm an android, and he lingered and glared at the guy for like another half second and then walked away, then I would have been like, yes.
That's true. That's a good point.
Or even like giving him the finger, or at least pushed his balls against the force field.
I am just fully operational. Pow!
I can understand that if you made it a little more creepy, but I do totally agree with Clay that that scene's necessary because it further hits home the point about how alien Data is from us.
Right.
And his decision that he arrived at is a creepy decision because it's devoid of emotions, which logically makes more sense, but for some reason as a viewer of the show makes you feel unsettled.
Yeah.
I think something that's in this episode, I feel like they're writing him. Like, I don't know how much of this feeling that this way that we're reading it is intentional and how much of it is the fact that I think they slipped up and wrote him more like Spock than they wrote him like Data.
Oh, maybe. Because
some of the, like that line coming off of the transporter seems like something Spock might say. You know, it's something like they wrote him with that wiggle room that Spock has. But I don't know. Maybe not. I mean, either way, I think it's really good.
So there's an episode later on where Data's having dreams and he gets really curious about them and he's analyzing them. And I feel like in the later seasons, anytime Data acts unusual, he's very interested in what's going on with himself.
Mm.
And I feel like it's a true form. I don't think Data would actually act the way he does in this episode. I think it's a great episode for him, but I think later on, if they had written this episode as season 6, he would have been extremely unnerved by the lie he told. He would have told Picard that he lied. Yeah. He would have investigated. Yeah. You'd see his dad as a ghost or whatever. It would have been a whole thing.
I can see that. And I'm glad in that case that this happened earlier than a later season. Yeah, it's just... Yeah, it's fascinating, but I think we'll wrap it up here. We've been going for a while, so I'm going to take a quick break, play audio clip, another audio clip, and we're going to come back with ratings and reviews for The Most Toys.
Oh, you come to see me repent? It's your final satisfaction? Want to see me beg for mercy? You're not going to get any of that from me.
I expected nothing.
Our roles are reversed. Aren't they, Data? You're the collector now. Me, I'm in a cage.
So it seems.
Just don't count me out too quickly. I had you in my collection once. I can have you there again.
Unlikely, sir. Your collection has been confiscated. All of your stolen possessions are being returned to their rightful owners. You have lost everything you value.
It must give you great pleasure.
No, sir. It does not. I do not feel pleasure. I am only an android.
All right, guys. I'm going to need help with this one. I'm super torn as to what to grade this. Sean, you want to start us off? 1 to 5 is the rating scale. 5 being an absolute classic, 1 being Drek. Where are you going to place this?
So the previous episode, Clay and I rated it a 3.5. I think this was slightly better. So I'm going to go 3.5 to 4, I guess.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah, I would say the same. Like I said, it's tough because there's so much potential that was not explored. But the way that they hit the landing at the end is so good that, if I was having a conversation with someone about Star Trek, say on a podcast, and they were to ask, let's say we started talking about Data and they were to say, blah, blah. And I say, you know what episode you should watch? You should watch this one. And I would probably say this episode because it is an interesting Data episode and interesting look into how he acts and how he could act. And so I would say if it's not a four, I would say, yeah, it's a 3.5, 4. It's I hate to be wishy-washy about it, but if I have to come down I'm going to say 4, just because this is one that I would actively recommend, I think.
Yeah.
Do you think this episode is overall better than Hollow Pursuits?
That's tough. That's
my dilemma.
I'm going to say yes, because I think they both had the opportunity to deal with some pretty dark shit, and I think this one took a little bit more of a leap than Hollow Pursuits does, because Hollow Pursuits is pretty jaunty overall.
Right.
Yes.
And I like Barclay was great, but you know, the ending on this was so good.
Yeah.
That goes a long way with me.
Yeah. Hollow Pursuits is really an acting showpiece, and this episode is really like a thought, like a concept showpiece. And I mean, like I've said before, I'm biased. Yeah. I prefer those usually over everything else, but.
Right.
Yep.
The package is good on this episode. The whole thing as a unit is pretty, I mean, it's not perfect, but it's not as all over the place as Hollow Pursuits was.
Oh, really? I'd go the other way. I think Hollow Pursuits is probably a better episode overall. The highs of most toys are much higher than the highs of Hollow Pursuits, but the lows of the most toys are much lower than the lows of Hollow
Pursuits. I mean, it's tough because, I mean, their B stories are both so, you know, recyclable, you know?
Yeah, I think the B story in the most toys is, it has to happen. Like, there's no way they can't do that story. It's just, it's so boring compared to the Data story.
Yeah.
That it's really damaging overall. To
also, here's a question that I thought while I was watching it that's not really related to the ending here. But why don't they have, for just because of situations like this, why don't they have Geordi like Wi-Fi into Data's visual cortex or something?
Yeah.
Bluetooth wasn't really a thing.
Well, I
back
feel like
then.
They've I don't mean literally why, but you know what I mean. Like why don't they have some sort of like I mean maybe it's an infraction into him being a sentient being or something.
That would be that's if I was writing on the show, that's how I would argue. Data wouldn't want it because he doesn't want to be. He wants to be his own sentient being.
Yeah,
that's interesting. Could he wire into Geordi and see like Geordi crying every night because he's single and
and I would see the same. Geordi wouldn't want it, so it would make Data would just kind of parrot what he would expect other people to do.
Well, Geordi's an idiot, and this would make him more interesting.
Well, what is kind of interesting, like I was thinking, is like, if I was Data, you know, and I'm thinking, I don't know if they would have thought this far ahead in terms of like the future of technology, but looking at it from a modern 2015 standpoint, I feel like Data would automatically back up his memory banks to like the Enterprise computer or something, you know? So like if something like this did happen, like in The Empire Strikes Back where C-3PO gets blown up, and so they figure out that he got blown up by stormtroopers by playing his memory back. Like something like that. Like it would just be like a failsafe that he would do just naturally as a robot.
Well, it's true. They do it in
Nemesis.
That's
right, yeah.
So that does come to fruition. It's not at this point. I guess if I was to upgrade any technology, I would have Geordi have like X-Men Cyclops blasts and he could just shoot phasers at his visor. That would be the only thing that I would really add. Or he can use the whatever those special guns in this episode were. He could just glue them to the side of his head and walk around with them. Yeah. But anyway, my rating for this episode, I think you guys have convinced me. I'm going to give it a 4. I was wavering between a 3 and a 4. It's either like a super strong 3 or a 4. I'll go with a 4.
It's a weak 4, no doubt.
Yeah.
It's just the other stuff drags it down a little bit, and it wasn't until halfway through this episode I was really enjoying it. The first half I was like, ooh, this one is not going particularly well. But as you guys were saying, the ending certainly saves it, brings it up quite a bit. It's one of the we've had two heady Star Trek topics 2 weeks in a row.
Also I was just going to say, also for a second, before they showed that Saul Rubinek was the villain, I was really hoping it was going to be Clint Howard's character, that little weird baby guy from the original series.
There's actually, it's funny you say that. There was Rubinek was called in on short notice. There was a David Rappaport. Do you know that actor?
It sounds familiar. It sounds familiar.
He's a little person actor. He was originally scheduled to play, but he attempted suicide during the during the shooting of this, and then he actually killed himself.
Oh my god!
On the Blu-ray,
was he in Willow? Was he Willow's friend?
He's in Time Bandits.
Oh, okay,
that Gilliam movie.
Yeah. Okay.
He's in a few other things. He might be in Willow. I don't know. I can't pull up his thing. But yeah, he tragically killed himself. But his scenes are on the Blu-rays. You can see the stuff that he actually shot before he was
unavailable.
Yep. But I think Rubinek was probably a better choice. I don't know if it would have been distracting to have. Yeah, I don't know whatever it is. But I think Rubinek does a fine job in and of itself. Yeah. It's the right sort of tone for the character. Yeah. And all that stuff.
One little niggle I have, I didn't get to work in here, was the last time we spoke, we were talking about how bad the docking bay on the Enterprise looks, how weak that set is. But the docking...
Yeah, the shuttlecraft.
Yeah, the shuttle bay on this other ship looks great. Why the hell? Like, why can't you Enterprise...
Anyway, we're back. Total normal. Sean, did you have any thoughts about the shuttlecraft bay on the alien ship?
Well, since you asked, I don't know where I left off, but last time we were talking, I was complaining about the shuttle bay on the Enterprise looking so horrible, but the shuttle bay on this other ship, which isn't as advanced as the Enterprise, looks fantastic, and it just bugged me that apparently they do have the budget for a good shuttle bay, and they just didn't want to go around and rearrange the original.
Yeah, it's true. This one did look good. I don't know if they were shooting in a smaller portion of the original shuttle bay or whatever they were doing. It did look good. It was a nice set. I even liked his collection set. It's not bad. It's just a circular room, but pulled it off.
Yeah,
anyway.
my biggest problem with the collection set is I wish it had more stuff in it. Like it had been filled out a little bit more. I mean, maybe there's more than one room. I don't know, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, I think at a certain point, though, the sparseness makes things feel more important, maybe. You know, like if you have a lot, because the implication is he has one of a kind.
Right.
So,
what's one collectible item you would have liked to have seen in there as an Easter egg?
One collectible item. All right,
if he had Deckard's gun from Blade Runner back there, that would have been awesome.
Oh, yeah. an alien skull from the movie Alien.
I would have done a sort of wink to the original series.
Oh, you know what he should have had? This would have been super, super obscure and would be hard to spot. But you know how in The Wrath of Khan, Khan only wears one glove for some reason? He should have had the other glove.
How about Michael Jackson's other glove?
Or just Michael Jackson.
OJ's. Just a collection of gloves. OJ's glove. You got Michael Jackson's glove. You got just 45 minutes of the episode of gloves.
Every now and then, Michael Jackson would moonwalk over in front of Data. Data would just give him that look.
And just, you know, in the final beam up scene where Riker's like, "Jesus, Data, did you try to kill that guy?" Right? Data just pulls off the glove, says, "The glove doesn't fit. You must have quit," and just walks out the transport bay. That's what I would have done. But anyway, thank you guys for listening. You enjoyed the content. You're on YouTube. A like and a comment's appreciated. And you're on iTunes. A rating or review helps get the show out there. Sean, Clay, thank you for coming by and talking about the most.
Thanks for bearing with me, guys. I appreciate it.
Oh, no. The internet connection is a fickle thing. It might be my horrible fire disaster that's going on outside my apartment right now. But anyway, thank you guys for listening. Thank you for following along as we continue this Star Trek podcast. We're going to be back, or I'm going to be back with Sarek, which is a pretty influential and important episode. That'll be in a couple days. So, guys, thanks you again.
Thank you.